Hi, this is Sharon Derricks, a freelance speaker, author, and apologist.
Dr. Sharon Derricks. Sharon, good to see you. Welcome to Yarnton.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Last time we met, we were at the Lanier Theological Library, and you did a wonderful lecture for us around your book, Am I Just My Brain? And today we're going to be talking about another book that you've written. It's just been recently published here in 2023. It's entitled Broken Planet, If There's a God, Then Why Are There Natural Disasters and Diseases? And you solved that question, right? Completely.
No, I definitely don't solve it. I don't know that it's possible to solve such a complex question, but I certainly try and give some helpful responses.
Yeah, well, we're glad to see you here at this place, and we appreciate you taking this time.
Oh, well, I'm really glad to be here. It's a pleasure.
Now, your first book is entitled Why. What is that book about? Just very briefly.
So why is also about the question of if God exists and is good, then why is there suffering? But it's a more broad treatment of the subject. Using the same style as Broken Planet, combining stories of people who believe in God, who are Christians, but have suffered in awful ways, and yet continue to hold to belief in a good God, with chapters that deal with apologetic argument and reasoning and why it still makes more sense to believe in God than not, even though our world is very broken. So why is a book on suffering as well? And Broken Planet focuses more on natural disasters.
Your second book is Am I Just My Brain? We did a podcast on that. Well, you also came and did a lecture on that. And in the show notes, we're going to put information about how you can hear those and see those as well. A number of years ago, I interviewed a doctor, a medical doctor. I think he was from Baltimore in Maryland. And he began to notice some things in his practice. He noticed certain diseases resurfacing over and over again. And he ended up finally just leaving medicine and becoming an advocate for the planet, because he said, my real patient was the planet, not these people who were getting these diseases and having these maladies associated with the diseases that were coming from the environment, in a sense. So that became his life's work. So here in Broken Planet, I feel sort of the same sense of what he was talking about. There's something wrong here. And you use natural disasters as a way to sort of talk about that. So what's the big idea of the book?
Yeah, I think that the big idea is that it still makes more sense that God exists than if he doesn't, even though we live on an incredibly broken planet. I mean, there are many different angles that I could come at this, but actually there are kind of natural factors. There are human factors, but there are also spiritual factors that are playing into the brokenness that we see in our bodies and also in the natural world.
Yeah. One of the things I like about the book is the way you interweave those stories throughout the book. How did you choose the people that you chose to interview and get their stories? How did you do that?
I was at that point part of an international organization that was able to kind of connect me with different people around the world that I wanted to try and cover as many different kinds of natural disaster as I could. Mm-hmm. And so I was looking for people that had particular experience of this disaster and this kind of disaster, and those that spoke English and were able to articulate what had happened to them. And so it was kind of the people that responded to that, really,
I ended up interviewing.
I interviewed more people than have gone into Broken Planet. In fact, quite a few more. So I wasn't able to include every interview. But what we did was we interviewed them over Zoom. So there was a low carbon footprint rather than flying around the world. And that interview was recorded and transcribed and then edited by me into a format that seemed to flow and make sense, that I thought would make sense to a reader. and then the person themselves gave their approval and consent to that, and
then you could use their material at that point. Well, you talk about tsunamis, you talk about locust invasions, you talk about earthquakes. I mean, just back in February of this year, there was an awful earthquake in Turkey and in Syria, and last report I saw, about 50,000 people had lost their lives in that event, and then subsequently because they were beneath the rubble of these broken buildings.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, I mean, it was just so shocking to see that kind of number of deaths go up and up and just keep rising. Mm. And just really, really, really tragic. And one of the points that I make in my book is that although we're not responsible for earthquakes, we're not even all that good at predicting them, I don't think. Not like you can predict a tsunami or a hurricane.
Right. But often the tsunamis come so quickly after the event.
Yes.
Right. In the case of the one in Indonesia, as I recall, it was just a few hours, it seemed like, after the event. And so how can you let people know what's coming? How can they make plans?
Yeah.
It's really tough.
It is really tough. Yeah, it absolutely is. Although I think earthquakes are even harder. I think you have like a few seconds. I mean, you can say in general that a region is due an earthquake at any moment, but what that actually means.
Right. You talk about Yellowstone National Park in the U.S.
Yes.
At one point, and Kathy and I visited that last year. And it was a beautiful place, amazing place.
Yes.
But yet thinking that all of that could at any moment sort of blow to smithereens. It's frightening.
It is. It is. And yet you mentioned the beauty. There's a paradox involved in this, and that some of the mechanisms involved in natural disasters also contribute to great natural beauty and sustain life. I mean, Yellowstone is teeming with life and all kinds of extraordinary plants and animal life. And that's partly a result of the mineral-based kind of soil that it has from the volcanic activity. And so while beauty is no substitute for a life that's lost in a natural disaster, it makes us realize there's something that this question is more complicated than it might originally seem. And certainly in the case of earthquakes, that tectonic plate activity is known to be necessary to sustain life, to recycle nutrients from deep beneath the Earth's crust back to the surface. That if we didn't have tectonic activity, then Earth wouldn't be life-sustaining in the way that it is.
And so a planet that doesn't have this kind of crust that we have, these plates moving, is not likely to be able to sustain life.
It seems to
or
be.
Or have life at all.
Yeah, it seems to be. Although, of course, a skeptic might say, well, why couldn't God have created a planet that sustained life but didn't require rippling streets and bodies buried beneath buildings? And and of course, that's a valid question. I guess what we would say in this regard is that it seems to be that if you set in motion a certain set of laws of nature, then other outcomes become more likely. That if you set in motion a planet that is tectonic and needs that kind of activity, then it becomes more likely that humans are going to be kind of caught up in that activity. And of course, it becomes a disaster when people are involved and get hurt and suffer and die.
Yes.
The activity on its own isn't right or wrong. There's nothing right or wrong about it.
Mm-hmm.
It seems necessary, but it's only when people get involved that they become disastrous.
Yeah. If a hurricane goes into South Texas, not far from us, where it's not populated, they don't even hardly send a news crew down there to take a look at it. But if it goes into Houston, one of the most populated cities, then it becomes a real, and many people die. Many people, the economies are destroyed, buildings are destroyed.
Yeah.
There's the disaster
when
it involves people.
Exactly.
So the pandemic recently, we've been through the COVID pandemic, and there are discussions around, was this a human-made thing, or was this just a natural movement from animal to human beings?
Yeah.
I don't know that we can solve that, but sometimes people are involved in these things that are natural disasters.
Yes.
Somebody might start a fire
that
becomes a big blaze and destroys homes and destroys and kills people as well.
Absolutely. And one of the points that I make in my book, which is a really important one, is that there are human factors and natural factors. And although we're not necessarily responsible for or even can figure out how these things start and why they occur at all, we humans undoubtedly make them worse. So just momentarily going back to Turkey and Syria, we see that so many died because buildings were not built to withstand earthquakes. And the reason they weren't is because regulations were, there were shortcuts and people used cheaper materials and didn't put steel into buildings, meaning that they just wouldn't withstand an earthquake and people's apartment blocks pancaked. We saw that in Haiti in 2010 as well. And so human beings undoubtedly increase the suffering and add to the death toll when there's a natural disaster. And I think the same would be true in the pandemic, that we will probably never really know how it started, whether it was human experimentation or a rogue bat in a Wuhan animal market.
Who knows?
But our inability to respond rapidly, our desire to kind of ignore lockdown regulations, which we saw in the UK even at the level of government, which has been obviously an ongoing conversation. And even the impact of poverty, you know, some people have had to be more exposed, more vulnerable to the pandemic and to the virus because they had front-facing jobs that they had to continue with. People in the medical services, people in care, teachers and so on. And so there are all kinds of factors that play into the impact that a natural disaster has. There are natural factors that seem to come from nature itself that seem to be beyond human control. And then there are human factors where we make things worse.
It seems like the cities are the places where things get worse. If it's an earthquake in Gaziantep, for example, yes. But if it's out somewhere else and fewer people are involved, are we just too concentrated in cities, you think?
It could be. And the geophysicist Robert White does make the point that increasing population density and just generally the rise in global population makes it more likely that an earthquake or a tsunami is going to affect a large number of people just because there's more people around than there were 200 years ago. What are we now, past 8 billion?
I think we're close to it, if we're not.
There's something about just the number of people that are on Earth, and people have built in seismically active areas. You could take the Pacific Ring of Fire. I mean, there's a ton of people living in that
part
area.
Of it is the beauty.
It's the fertility.
And the climate often is just some of the best climate in the world.
Yes. And yet they're seeing kind of natural disaster after natural. You barely recover from one and you've got another one. And I mean, hurricane after hurricane and tsunamis and flooding and so on. And of course, there's in countries like Bangladesh, you know, flooding is probably the most devastating kind of natural disaster. It doesn't have the drama of an earthquake necessarily, but it...
Sometimes it happens slowly.
It happens slowly, but it's so devastating, and I think millions are displaced through flooding. Mm. Lack of infrastructure, which means that, they're just sinking under rising sea levels and...
So how did someone who has a PhD from Cambridge in brain imaging get interested in this broken planet?
Well, I think I wrote my first book because although I was a scientist and I wanted to write about scientific subject matter, and but I was also aware that suffering is in some ways the biggest barrier to faith, the biggest question of all, and often behind a more intellectually focused scientific question about God might lie a question to do with suffering, perhaps coming from an experience of suffering or having seen someone else suffer. So I just felt like that was the more important question to address, and to address in a way that really engages people who wouldn't call themselves Christians. And so I have tried to write books that someone that doesn't even know what they believe could pick it up and read it and not feel kind of alienated by the language or the approach. You know, I've tried to assume not necessarily any belief in God in my writing. So that's partly why I started with suffering. And then natural disasters, I felt like, is the hardest kind of kernel of the question of suffering, because it's saying that there's something wired into nature itself that's broken. Well, if God is good and he was the one that supposedly created our good planet, why on earth did he make it that way? Mm-hmm. Why did he not make a planet that has no physical problems at all, and right. no disease or sickness?
Yeah, you're talking here about the pain and the necessity of pain. And along with pain goes suffering. Yeah. And I think you used the term moderate pain as opposed to severe pain, whether that's from a disease or whether that's from an accident or an earthquake or whatever. Yes. Why is pain necessary?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think that comes along in the section where I talk about, yes, it's all very well to say there are human factors and there are natural factors and there's life-sustaining and humans make them worse and so on. But that doesn't get us away from the question, why are there earthquakes at all? Why are there diseases at all? Why is it that our bodies are headed for decay, not for kind of further improvement? Mm. There's something wired into the way the natural world is that calls for a deeper kind of explanation. And that's where I start to talk about spiritual factors.
That science can't really touch.
That science can't really touch and was never intended to touch. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, that's what gets me into the fact that I say that there is something wrong with the world that we live in. Mm. There is something inherently wrong. And, you know, Romans talks about nature kind of groaning and being in sort of all pains of childbirth, you know, not in a finished state, in a state of transition. A woman in labor is not in a finished state.
Right, and
there is more to come. And actually, that's the Christian theistic picture on this, is that there's more to come. We're not done. God isn't done yet with the world that he has
made. The world is becoming still.
Yes. And so one of the other indicators of that, as you rightly point out, is from Genesis. One of the arguments is the reason for the brokenness is the human decision to turn away from God has introduced a brokenness into not just human behavior, but also human biology and the natural world itself. And actually, one of the things that we see is that God says to Eve that her pains in childbirth will increase. You know, that there's an impact on biology from turning away from God. But it doesn't say that they will begin. It says they will greatly increase, which is interesting, which gets to the question of why moderate pain might have had some beneficial role, even in Eden, even before that human rebellion against God. That pain alerts us, moderate physical pain alerts us to danger. It alerts us, you know, we have pain sensors in our hands that in our skin in general, that kind of alerts us to our environment so that there's preservation. And when that deteriorates, actually you see the condition of leprosy is there's so much damage caused because there's no ability to sense pain.
Mm. People can just sort of wear away at that point, right?
Yes.
They're not aware that they've injured something.
Exactly. I don't know how far to take the illustration, though, as well, because I also I'm wary to, I know that in terms of the things that we go through in life in general, that sometimes God can use our suffering for good. But I don't believe that the good that can come out of it is necessarily the reason that it happened.
Yeah.
And so moderate pain can point us to what's really important in life. It can point us to the things that perhaps we've had out of kilter. It can point us to God and our need for relationship with him, and God can certainly use that.
And that often happens when a group of people go through some kind of disaster,
yeah.
they often begin thinking and turning to God, at least short term.
Yes.
They turn to God. Churches fill up again, maybe yes. mosques as well, and synagogues, who
yes.
knows. But it's a brilliant book. I really would commend people to take a look at it. One person who promotes the book, Sean McDowell, said, "This is my new go-to book on the natural problem of evil." And it's a great book. Broken Planet. If there's a God, then why are there natural disasters and diseases, by Sharon Dierks. Sharon, thanks for being with us today on the Stone Chapel.
Thank you very much.
One of the things I love about doing these podcasts is that inevitably I learned something, whether I wanted to or not. And today I did, and I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. For more info about our guest, check out our show notes. They're there for you. Subscribe to the podcast. We'd love to hear from you. Leave us a comment. Rate us. You know the drill. We're on Apple and Google and Spotify and iHeartRadio and Stitcher and other places. I want to say thanks to those that make this podcast possible, for Kathy Capes, Jocelyn Solis, Phil Kagi, and the Lanier Foundation. Let's give it up for them. Cue the applause track. Thanks for listening. Stand by for a nugget of wisdom from Dr. Sharon Dierks. Do you have something?
Yes, I do. I do. I actually do.
I should have asked before I did that.
That was it. That was the nugget of wisdom.
Silence is golden. Yeah. Silence is golden. Yeah. No.
Not unrelated to the topic of natural disasters, I want to just remind people that you matter to God. Often when we think about a disaster, we think of people in a far-off part of the world. And that can sometimes lead us to think that our problems don't matter to God. But actually, God's arms and hands are big enough to cope with it all. So bring your suffering to Him. You matter to God.